This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's Tuesday, time to talk politics. And never mind talking, yelling is the softest way to put it. We are experiencing a whirlwind of tariffs, threats, insults. And just in the last hour, as you heard in Jeremy's news, our government has announced those dollar-for-dollar retaliatory tariffs that the prime minister promises, raising them on aluminum and steel from 25 to 50% on nearly $28 billion of goods. Now, they're going on everything from makeup to appliances and smartphones. And also 50% tariffs on clothing and apparel, and also on dairy products, seafood, and certain steel and aluminum derivatives. So Ottawa says it's matching the amount of the U.S. tariffs that they just imposed after midnight on Friday, but the list does not include some of the same items targeted by the Americans. At the same time, as you also heard in the news, Ottawa has announced a $7.5 billion aid package for affected businesses. Now, retaliatory tariffs hurt Canadians, Canadian consumers, and Canadian businesses the most. And when it comes to that kind of relief, the devil really is in the details, because in the past, many small businesses have complained about the arcane complexity of these types of programs. So we'll have to see how that plays out. Now, I have to say the crisis seems to have done what we ourselves could not do, and that is that it appears to have united Canadians. And that is the reason why a lot of the people I've already spoken to say they don't really see a way back to the table, at least for a while, a long while, until the midterms. Now, I don't know. I'd still bet that the professional negotiators involved, Jameson Greer, Dominic LeBlanc, Janet Charette, have already talked since the breakdown. Also, I want to, with our terrific panel, get into that whole question that we have to hurt the Americans where it counts. And we're talking about our exports of power. So that threat that Doug Ford is suggesting, that we cut off their energy or charge way more for it. So what are not just the politics of doing that, but the practicalities of trying to do that? So, people, what do you think? The numbers, 866-740-4740. That is our text line, our long-distance phone line, 416-360-0740.
And now, the Recovering Politicians Panel.
And now I'd like to welcome Sherry DeNovo, a former NDP MPP, Lisa Raitt, a former deputy leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, and Alex Byrne-Kurzicki, who is a senior consultant at Crestview Strategy. Hi, everyone. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Libby.
Hi, Libby.
I would like to start with Lisa, because you are on the advisory body, and I'm wondering if you've had any briefings since then, and if there's anything you can share.
So we had a briefing, obviously, after the talks terminated and the Prime Minister recalled the negotiating team. And really, we were told pretty much what everybody else has been told. There is no new information in there. It was highlighted that it became apparently clear abundantly clear, rather, it became abundantly clear that there was a difference in what they had been negotiating with Mr. Greer than what they had been negotiating on the last day. And as a result, they went from thinking that there was going to be a possible deal to thinking there's not going to be a possible deal, and hence the decision. Since that time, they really emphasized and focused that they are going to now pivot and focus on retaliation and relief. Those are the two things that they wanted to push out. I'm really surprised, Libby, they got it done as quickly as they did. To be honest, think about it. This is Tuesday. This is almost like instantaneous in the world of politics and in the world of bureaucracy, to be honest. But they're kind of building upon stuff that they already had in place. So they announced it today. Retaliatory tariffs, $27.6 billion in U.S. goods. People will feel it when they go to the grocery store. They'll feel it when they go to Walmart to buy your toilet paper, for example. They're going to feel it on all kinds of things. So they are being told to buy Canadian because supposedly there are Canadian products that can substitute for the American products that are going to have the tariff on it. Interesting to see it all unravel. We'll talk more about it. But I would just say this. One thing I've learned from talking to our clients here at CIBC over the past couple of days is their great fear in how long this is going to go on, because it's really hard to plan revenues when 70% of your revenue base was the United States and all of a sudden it's not there anymore. And number two, they're also a little afraid of the retaliatory tariff because sometimes there's unintended consequences on what you're doing in your business that will be impacted by something that's innocuous, but turns out, no, it can really be harmful. So the government's going to have ears open on anything that may be happening regarding these retaliatory tariffs we're putting on American goods that are having an unintended consequence impact on Canadian businesses. So they're going to have to listen really carefully.
That's interesting. Before we move on, can you give an example of an unintended consequence?
Sure. What ends up happening, let's give you an example of steel, for example. So in terms of steel, the tariffs get slapped on, and they're going in both ways now. But then on the outside of that, someone will make an allegation that there's dumping happening from Canada, from the United States. And then all of a sudden, a Canadian company in real time today has an anti-dumping lawsuit brought against them by the United States when they don't make any of the stuff that they're talking about. So it attracts attention and it causes more headaches for companies that really isn't caught up in it because they don't sell the good that's being tariffed, yet the Americans are accusing them of doing it. That was the example given to me this morning.
Okay. You know, the list has a lot of practical things on it. And Sherry, I have to say, when talks broke off, one of the first things that I thought that was way down the list of things to deal with is that my middle-aged American dishwasher is starting to act up. And I thought, whoa, so not only might prices for it and parts go up, but they might be harder to get. And there's now, I guess, a window until Labor Day to buy some of these things if they're on stock. I mean, who knows? People might already be raising prices in anticipation. But, makeup, it boggles the mind.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, yes, Prime Minister. I mean, I think I speak for the majority of Canadians when I say I was delighted to see dollar for dollar response. I was delighted to see the hard line, because appeasing bullies politically, whether it's an economic war, which let's face it, we're in, or a war, doesn't work. We know this from history. We know this from, I speak for most Canadians. And I think for most Canadians, they realize this is going to impact them too, that just like it would in wartime. Like we get that. That this is going to cost us something. But I also think that talk about elbows up went up a whole other foot, you know, from these announcements. I think there's, you know, when I hear people speaking about it, everybody's saying, yeah, it's going to cost more, it's going to hurt, we're going to have to tighten our belts, but it will be worth it rather than giving in, because because you never know. And also, of course, the world is holding its breath for the midterms. So we're all desperately hoping around this planet that that happens. Meanwhile, China's going to do very well. Thank you very much. And it seems to me that aluminum, I don't know, I think we've got a lot more power than we give ourselves credit for in terms of our negotiating. And I hear Lisa's point, absolutely. She always makes good ones. But again, that is the mood of the land right now. I don't think that's going to shift.
Alex, first of all, welcome. This is our first time talking to you. Welcome. Thanks for joining us. So first of all, do you agree that the fact that the whole country seems to be behind Mark Carney on this, does that make it harder to get back to the table? Or do you think that some back channels are already moving?
So first, thanks for having me on the show. Second of all, let's be clear. Canada went into this and was in a position where they negotiated in good faith. The entire trade team was united, and they were looking for a deal that was fair to both parties. At the end of the day, the US terms were unfair, economic, not something that Canada could accept. I think that the Prime Minister has a broad mandate here to support Canadians. I think that Canadians know that this is going to be a challenging road, but it's also important to note that this was just the first round of negotiations on those US 338 and 232 tariffs. If we accepted a bad deal, we would still have to renegotiate CUSMA. And if we did a bad deal on that, well, then we would be in a much worse negotiating position when we get to those negotiations further down the line.
If we get there.
If we get there.
No. A couple of things to sort out, Lisa. You know, our team is saying they introduced some things at the last minute that were not in what had been talked to before, say, Howard Lutnick got into the negotiations. But the Americans say we also introduced new things, presumably after Doug Ford and Wab Kanu talked to the Prime Minister about what they would need before putting alcohol back on the shelves. And there's also this morning's thing where Trump said it's not true that they asked for anything that would hurt the protection of the French language. So what about those?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. I had to change microphones because I was sounding like AI is what I was told. So I'm good that I don't sound like AI anymore.
Good.
This is the way I look at that. In a breakdown of a negotiation, both sides are going to come at it and try to put themselves in a better light. No question about that. I do believe that they had general principles agreed to. For example, X percent tariff on steel, X percent on automobiles. But when they started getting down to the fine print, both sides tried to make it as good for themselves as they could. So in the case of Canada, they asked for something. And in the case of the United States, they asked for something else. And I think if they had just gone along with this back and forth, they may have gotten somewhere. But it would appear to me, Libby, that the big deal breaker was something introduced by the United States, which basically said that, because I don't think any prime minister could sign this, which basically said, look, America reserves the right to replace the 50% tariff should we not be happy, essentially, with your immigration policy, your defense policy, your border security, your fentanyl stuff. I mean, that's insanity, and no one can write it. That's why the prime minister said that basically you'd be signing this agreement with a pencil because it didn't mean anything. I don't know whether or not the Americans would have backed off on that. I do think, though, I'm going to take the points on language. I do think we are owed more precision in this country on exactly what it was the Americans were asked in terms of language and culture, because it matters. We do not need to go down a rabbit hole saying they wanted to change the labeling on all of our packaging. We don't know that. We don't know if that's what they asked. It seems loony that they would ask that because it's a safety issue. But let's find out. So the government has to come clear, especially on that one. Don't hide behind trying to whip up some kind of frenzy around nationalism unless you are willing to tell us exactly what it was that the Americans did to challenge our sovereignty on that matter.
Well, and not just on that. Really, I think we are owed more clarity on exactly what torpedoed this thing. I'm going to take a call from Ron in Guelph. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Libby. Thanks for taking my call. People are forgetting that we're not dealing with an adult here. We're dealing with Donald Trump as a spoiled child. And anybody that's ever seen one, the more often you give in to a spoiled child, the more they want. And our prime minister gave in to him on the Gordie Howe Bridge. And Trump just smiles and says, well, guess what? They're going to give in on everything else. So, I mean, I think the best thing we can do is to is use energy as a crutch. Donald Trump says, Canada doesn't have anything we need. Well, how about uranium, electricity, oil? And there's a lot of things that we have that they need.
Okay. We'll get to that in a moment, Sherry. But speaking of childish, I mean, you know, when I heard what Doug Ford said yesterday about the real estate on his posterior, I was even wondering, well, gee, can I run the A word on radio?
Yeah,
And then the crossback called him a loser. So what do you make of that aspect, the name calling?
I mean, well, so far, what I've seen from our negotiating team and people like Lisa and others is adults in the room. And I think your caller's right, though. When it comes to Trump, what are you dealing with? Nobody knows. Moods change constantly. I think Ford's role in this is problematic, I would just say. I mean, this is a man who's forcing all of our teachers going back into a school year to buy all their supplies from Staples when they already had a good supplier, an American company. So there's only so far he can get with the Mr. Canada role if he continues to pull stunts like that, because people know that on the ground it's not true. So again, I think that kind of posturing by provincial premiers is you know, again, problematic. And the last thing we should do is sink to his level, Donald Trump. The last thing we should do. And the more we should look like the grown-ups in the room. And I think we do. I think we have done that successfully internationally. I mean, the kudos coming in from everywhere, including state representatives, including American politicians, is pretty substantial. So good all. And obviously, I'm not a liberal, but I have to say that, I don't think any party should have stayed in that room and done a deal under those circumstances.
Alex, I mean, we're all gung-ho today, but as we've seen with the original elbows up by Canadian, even travel to the U.S. just about a week or 10 days ago, I did a segment on how people are going to the sedates and not even trying to hide it. So what do you think the possible staying power for this is?
I think that the staying power of the Canadian people on this is pretty infinite. I think one thing that Doug Ford has reasonably determined is that you got to stand up for yourself. I am not a conservative and don't agree with Doug Ford on much, but I can say when you get a bully who is going to continue to poke you in the eye, Doug Ford believes in one thing, and it's for the people. That is his entire ethos. And so he believes that he's standing up for the people of Ontario. I think that the people of Canada are going to stand up for Canada, and they're going to make the choices that are right for them. Some might go vacation, but we're also seeing vacation elsewhere. We're seeing businesses look at diversifying where they sell their products to. We're looking at Canada being the largest attractor of foreign investment in the world. That was published just a couple of months ago, and that's something that's only going to be built off of with the investment summit. I think that there are lots of opportunities for Canada to show its place in the world, and I think that the world wants to bet on Canada, so Canadians are going to bet on themselves.
Okay. Lisa, I want to get into a serious subject here, and that is using energy as a lever. Remember Doug Ford way back when all of this started suggested a 25% tariff or surcharge. And I mean, boy, it was like instantaneous for Donald Trump to cry uncle. And I also think there's some energy that we get from them, or it goes through pipelines mm-hmm. in the States. So, yeah. Again, both politically and practically, can we really do that?
I don't think so. And let's add one more. Let's add from a defense perspective, and I'll tell you why I bring that up. If the premier of Ontario wants to threaten energy tariffs, then he should focus on the energy tariffs within his own provincial boundaries. So if he wants to do it on electricity, that's fine. If he wants to do it on whatever he exports, that's fine. That's for him to call. I have a problem with him telling Alberta that they should do it for themselves, or equally a problem him telling Quebec that they should put a surcharge on their hydro going to the States. Each province is going to make their own decisions.
Well, they already have. Sorry to interrupt. Alberta already said no.
That's right. And they have. So why start the internal fight? We're united. Why start this internal fight? That's my bugaboo on that. But Susan Holt, who's the premier of New Brunswick, said something really interesting to me last night. Not to me. She said it on TV last night that really caught my attention. And this is the danger. She was talking about what New Brunswick sends. One of the things that New Brunswick sends into the United States is refined oil, because they've got the Irving refinery there. And she said, you know, we send things to the U.S. that they need, for example, blueberries, for example, lobster, and for example, oil. You want to fill your tanks in your cars. I'm okay with all of that threatening. But then she said, and also it fills the tanks of your fighter jets. And I thought, wow, no, too far. Do not threaten the United States when it comes to their military capacity. And that's why the oil is a problem. You can't say that you're going to shut off the oil, because the United States Armed Forces is the number one procurer of oil in the world. And we do provide some of it. That gets into a whole realm of, are you really at war, or yet an economic war? So no, I'm not in favor of a unilateral federal excise tax on energy.
But you're saying, okay to do something on our electricity, which is what was under discussion the last time.
No, they can't do it. They can't do it because the tariff, the slapback is too intense. We send, for example, we send electricity to the United States. They send some back to us. It goes back and forth. But imagine if we cut it off or we tariffed it. They've got something called Line 5, which is the oil pipeline that connects Alberta to the East Coast. And it goes right through Michigan, all entirely in the United States. He can shut that down. And we've seen it. He did it to the Gordie Howe Bridge. He refused to let customs. I mean, it'd be a shame if they had to do some repairs that took Army Corps of Engineers many years to determine whether or not they needed the repairs. There's lots of ways to bog this down and cause some severe problems with Canada. So don't monkey around with energy is my advice.
Alex, do you agree with that?
Yeah, it would be too much too soon. At the end of the day, we never threw the first punch. We're going to hit back, but we're going to hit back smart. I don't think that would be a smart punch to throw right now.
Yeah, one of the critiques, Sherry, is that when we retaliate, I mean, there's a list of 700 goods that it's so kind of diffuse that it doesn't necessarily land heavy.
Well, one of the things that I heard, and I'm not sure if this was, and I can't remember my source on this, but was that Trump has himself said that we are a major source, if not the only source, of aluminum in the States. So, I mean, that's a smart move. Like, that's a smart move. And yeah, energy, yeah, we don't want to get, I mean, it would be ridiculous to get into kind of a military confrontation with the United States, which is what oil is about. Lisa's right on that. So, but I mean, aluminum, pretty good, I think. And again, like the problem, the side effects are going to be felt on both sides. They're going to be felt on both sides of the border by business. It's not all going to be Canadian business. It's going to be American business too. And not only this, but remember, they're involved in a war. I mean, it's as is everything on the show, it's political. And so the hope is on the midterms. The hope is that Trump loses power in the midterms and that some sanity is restored. And they're not that far off. So we hope that politically, steps in before too many businesses fail on either side of the border. That's the hope.
Okay, just on that aluminum note, and we only have a little over a minute left, but they process the aluminum, and if we had so much control over aluminum, the cans wouldn't suddenly have spiked up in price, hurting our local breweries. That's one note on that. But just to wrap things up, Alex, do you think that there is any talk in the back channels now?
I am certain that the government is working on this. They may not be talking openly, but Canada wants to do a deal. Canada wants to do a fair deal, and that's what I think this government is working towards as one united team. If the United States presents one united team as well, I think that we can actually get some forward movement on this.
Lisa, last word to you. Do you see a way back to the table here?
I think the conversation has to happen between the president and the prime minister in order for that to happen. I don't think it's going to happen organically, but Alex is right. There are still conversations happening between the teams. And remember, one last thing. We still need to cooperate with the United States on things outside of trade, like cross-border security, like policing, like defense, like water resources. So we still have a relationship to maintain.
Okay, that's a good point. And on that note, we wrap things up. Thanks so much, Alex Byrne, Kersicki, Sherry DeNovo, and Lisa Wright. And we'll talk again soon.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Okay, we're taking a break. And one thing we haven't talked about yet, and the impact of these tariffs, and that is food. Affordability, a huge issue here. It's late summer, so there's a little bit of a break with all the wonderful local produce. But what does this all mean for what we put on the table when we come back?
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Well, we've been talking about some of the higher-end goods that we get from the United States and that are about to become more expensive. But what about the basics? Food. According to our next guest, this trade war could cost Canadian families an extra $200. This as the summer with its wonderful bounty of local produce is coming to an end. And I'm looking at the list of things that will be tariffed. And there are food products. So with all of that, first, let me give you the numbers if you have questions or comments. 866-744-7440, 416-360-0740. And now let's go to Dr. Sylvain Charlebois, President and Senior Director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie University. Hi, thanks for joining us.
Well, my pleasure.
Well, you've already put out an essay saying don't punish Canadians with food tariffs, but looks like that's already happening.
Actually, I think Ottawa read my piece because when I actually went through the list, yes, there's food on there, but I think the impact will be minimal. So I'm relieved a little bit, even though, I mean, tariffs are a bad idea, counter tariffs are even a worse idea. But if you are to apply kind of tariffs against the United States right now, this is the way to do it. I actually think that Ottawa did it the right way compared to last year's approach. Last year was a disaster, I think, Libby. I mean, last year, former Prime Minister Trudeau targeted specific food products and did impact our food inflation numbers. I believe Canada tariffs last year increased our food inflation rate by 0.5% at least. Within 6 months. So this time around, I'm not expecting the same thing.
Okay, so I'm looking at the list, and it's got things like honey, molasses, malt extract, and a variety of seafood products, and cheese and curd products. So what else is on the current list, and what makes you think that it won't hurt that much?
So you mentioned two categories there, honey. We make a lot of honey. And right now, honey is actually tariffed going to the U.S. by 50%, okay? And so my guess is that either our honey makers are going to absorb some of the tariffs going into the U.S., or they'll be looking for more markets in Canada. So actually, it's not a bad thing to do, to be honest. And secondly, you mentioned cheese. Well, we import very little cheese into Canada, to be honest, because tariffs are super high. So it was more symbolic than anything. So it's not, it's inconsequential, I think, in terms of some of the products that were on the list. Some of the things that I'm concerned a little about is for our farmers. Farming equipment is going to be tariffed. Some parts are going to be tariffed. So I'm concerned about that. And so if you're, if you run a tractor and a piece, you need a new part of some sort, it comes from the U.S., well, you're going to have to pay extra for that. That's certainly a concern for our farmers.
Well, and not just that, I was mentioning in the other thing when I heard about this, the first personal thing I thought about was that my middle-aged American dishwasher is starting to be finicky. It was good because it was on the list and I did some research and figured out what part, and now should I get the part or just get something else? And I was concerned not just that the prices will go up, but it may be very difficult to get the stuff in the first place. And that could really be a problem for people who need this equipment to do their business.
That's true. I mean, there's lots of equipment and appliances that are likely to be more expensive as a result of measures announced today that will actually be enforced starting on September 8th on Labor Day weekend. So, yes, absolutely. I mean, when you're applying counter-tariffs worth almost $30 billion, somewhere will be paying for it. But the one thing that people need to understand, and I'm not even sure if people understand that, counter tariffs are a tax on ourselves.
Yes.
That's basically it. And so all of the products that are on the list will actually make things more complicated, less competition. And when there's less competition, there's actually more higher prices. But when it comes to food, when I went through the list, I mean, the good news, to be honest, Libby, I'm way, way more comfortable with the list that I saw today versus the list I saw last March. Last March, I thought, oh my God, what are we doing to ourselves? This time around, I think that Mr. Champagne's approach was much more targeted and much more measured. So implications at the grocery store will be minimal.
Here's a tangential question. Do you know how are these tariffs collected?
You pay taxes, Libby. Where does that go? You tell me.
Well, no, but who collects them? I mean, here in Ontario, we can't even collect bus fare, let alone bail. So, which bureaucracy collects these tariffs, and really can they turn that quickly to collecting them? I'm a little mystified.
Yeah, so customs will actually collect all that that cash. Of course, we will make more money. In fact, last year with counter tariffs, we did make a little money. I can't remember the amount, but it was in the millions of dollars. And so again, it is a tax on ourselves, and it makes Canada a less interesting market to invest in. So if Ottawa felt the need to do this, I'm sure they know all this. I mean, it makes Canada a less attractive market. And keep in mind, regardless how you feel about the president of the United States and America right now, Canada is a much more interesting place to invest with the U.S. as an ally. I mean, that's basically it. Geographically, there's no doubt when you go to Europe, when you go to Asia, the fact that we're just north of the United States just makes Canada much more powerful and influential and interesting.
Well, yeah. And then there's the whole question of uncertainty. What businesses say is that, notwithstanding which goods are tariffed and which aren't, the uncertainty is stopping investment.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I've spoken to many company owners in the last few months, and they all feel the same way. I actually have people joining me on my podcast every week, And so this week we're actually releasing a new episode with the CEO of Bento Sushi Boxes. They actually serve 30 million sushi boxes a year, and they're actually incredibly cruelly exposed to what's happening with tariffs on both sides of the border, really. I mean, it's tariffs are just a bad idea, and I think that most Canadians absolutely are in disagreement with President Trump's approach. I'm certainly in disagreement with President Trump's approach, but we have to deal with it. And so you can deal with it in many different ways. Ottawa has chosen to apply counter tariffs. And so we'll see how it goes. My concern right now, so yes, I'm relieved today, but I'm expecting some sort of reaction from Washington. I suspect that this is not over. I am expecting some sort of retaliation to our retaliation. And that brings, like you mentioned, uncertainty.
What percentage of our food supply do we produce? How self-sufficient are we? And are we at the limit of that, or is there more that we can do?
Well, I mean, we do import a lot of food from abroad. So let's say that we sell for about $150 billion worth of food retail in Canada. I'd say about $70 billion is actually imported. But does it mean that we're importing things that we're not producing? Not necessarily. Food supply chain economics will actually get buyers to buy the best deal possible for their needs and wants. So Canada actually offers a lot of food. We actually are self-sufficient when you look at calories, when you look at what our bodies need. But economies don't work that way. Basically, we produce certain things that other people around the world want and need as well. So that's kind of how things go with Canada. We have a lot to offer. I mean, we're only 41 million people in a very, very big economy. So we are expected to trade and sell a lot, and we do sell a lot to the rest of the world. I would say that the one sector that needs help right now in Canada for our food autonomy situation is food manufacturing, and especially in Ontario. In the last 3 years, Food Ontario, the food manufacturing sector in Ontario has actually gone down in productivity. So if you look at GDP per hour worked in food manufacturing, it is dropping. And that's a bit of a problem. Whereas in the US and even Quebec next door, it's actually improving, but not in Ontario. So that needs to change.
What are the kinds of things that are manufactured?
Oh my goodness. Canned, you have all sorts of desserts, pasta. Pepsi has, I believe, 4 plants in Ontario alone. You have livestock and chicken and pork in both Hamilton and London, Ontario. You got pizzas made in Ontario, in London. You have juices. You have all sorts of products. It is the number one manufacturing sector. It's even bigger than cars, Libby.
Okay.
Bigger than cars.
And what about we're heading to the winter. So how insulated are we from having to rely on the United States for fresh fruits and vegetables?
That's a good point you're making, because right now, obviously, timing is everything. So we actually just published today a study on school lunches, how things are looking for parents out there feeding their children going to school. It's actually, we're doing okay. Like August was not bad. In fact, in Ontario, prices actually drop. I know most people don't see it, but we actually see it. We actually see certainly the difference. And frankly, I would say that September will be the same, but we are expecting a bit of an uptick in October, November, and December, where food inflation is actually going to be higher. But overall, not bad. But like I said, today's announcement was something that we were concerned about. but we're less concerned now. So hopefully this fall will be less problematic.
Okay, well, you know, it's good to hear a little bit of good news.
A little bit of good news, absolutely.
So thank you so much for that, Dr. Sylvain Charlebois. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, we're taking another break. When we come back, so what is this about renaming Lake Ontario? Can Donald Trump even do that? He's got a thing. I'm surprised he didn't suggest calling it Lake Trump. We'll talk about that when we return.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Well, it's not just a war of words. It's becoming a war of names. This morning, Donald Trump threatened to change the name of Lake Ontario to Lake America. Now, does he even have the power to do that? I'm surprised he doesn't want to call it Lake Trump, because I looked up the list of things that he has or has tried to rename after himself. And the list is quite long. You've got the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. That was changed until there was a legal challenge. There's now President Donald J. Trump Boulevard, which is a four-mile stretch of Southern Boulevard near the President's Mar-a-Lago Golf Club. Palm Beach International Airport. Ron DeSantis, the governor, signed legislation to rename the airport after the president. And the United States Institute of Peace. The Trump administration renamed that building after the president. And now we just heard recently that the U.S. Navy is considering naming an aircraft carrier that was previously slated to be named for a Black American World War II hero. Well, now they might name it after Trump. So there you go, people. Let me give the texts and the numbers again. 866-744-7440-416-360-0740. And now let us go to Anthony Wilson Smith, the president and CEO of Historica Canada. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, Libby.
So what do you make of this?
Well, I mean, where to begin, right? So I think actually a good place to begin, Libby, in terms of what you're just saying, is one of the reasons to not call it Lake Trump is if you look at the responses to the news stories in American media, never mind Canadian, some of the suggestions of what people might want to do in a lake named after him are pretty creative and nothing I would feel comfortable with saying unless I wanted to endanger your radio license. So they're original and not necessarily pretty.
Yeah, or not so original. I'm reminded of a certain Yiddish proverb that would very be easily adapted. So does he even have the ability to change the name? I mean, the lake apparently is half in their territory and half in ours.
Yeah, I mean, here's the process, Libby, in normal times, with heavy emphasis, of course, on normal times, because these are not. Usually the process when it happens is that, you know, where you share property, essentially, is the two countries have internal debates first. Each of them says among themselves, hey, do we want to change this? And does it make sense in terms of our neighbor as well? If both sides come up with saying, yeah, let's move forward, then they agree to do that. Then they come to an agreement. Then both go back and pass legislation marking the name change. And then, you know, not as an essential final process, but as protocol normally, they would go to the United Nations and say, hey, by the way, you know, on the maps and everything you put out, we'd be really glad if you would change it. Now, of course, none of that applies here because you have a guy who wants something different until half an hour passes and he wants something else again or something else. But, you know, in the case of course, the precedent is the Gulf of Mexico, which Americans now call the Gulf of America, which they've even managed to get onto Google Maps and otherwise because Google exists in the U.S. and beyond, and nobody else has changed, but there you go.
Well, I was going to ask about that. I mean, presumably, we know the tech bros have tried to curry favor with Donald Trump. Is that what's behind that? Because no other country has changed that name on their maps.
Obviously, I can't say definitively, but it's a pretty reasonable presumption given the series of other things that they've done in line with that wish, sure.
Do we have a caller here? No, we don't. So let us continue. It seems pretty silly, frankly.
Well, I mean, I think ever since we walked out on the talks the other night, the question has been, what kind of hissy fit was he going to have? How many of them was he going to have? And in what different areas? And of course, our premier, meaning as in Premier of Ontario, lit things up yesterday with some pretty creative remarks as well, which, you know, further set things off and off we go. We also know historically that the hours on Truth Social between about midnight and 6 a.m., because he never seems to sleep, are when he gets up to what I would politely call his most imaginative.
Right. Is there any actual possible impact, even if he is able to go ahead?
Well, a couple of things, first of all. One is, you know, of course, Lake Ontario is not named after the province of Ontario. Lake Ontario itself, Ontario is actually named after the lake, and that in turn comes from an Indigenous word. So you're already kind of, you know, trying to teach a lesson with something that doesn't work in teaching a lesson. You can call it anything again that you want internally. You know, you can call it President Donald J. if you want. You can call it anything else. Again, opening yourself up to these things. And we just keep calling it what we've called it. And certainly in theory, other than the people who run, you know, the tech bros, everybody else is going to keep calling it the same thing, including, based on the evidence, the people who live next door to these things on both sides of the border, who are the ones who are getting hit the hardest by all this.
Okay, I've got a text here from Ed in Dundas. He says, keep our half of the Lake Ontario and their half can be referred to as the losing side. Okay. Not sure what that amounts to.
The attitude so far on this side, at least, is kind of fun. I've seen some pretty creative suggestions, including one that the American side of Lake Superior be named Lake Inferior, for example.
Oh.
And, you know, and a lot of other within that. And I think, I think we've probably got enough bigger to get, you know, to get really mad about that's potentially threatening that, to, you know, that is than to view it. I think the right way is to view it as I see you viewing it, which is, yeah, come on, really? Like, you know, where are you going with this? You know, that's I'm with you on that.
Now, what about, I mean, he seems obsessed with putting his name on things. Is that, I mean, I'm wondering, like, is that some kind of almost a personality disorder? And I don't know what to make of it.
It's a bit like that old sarcastic saying, you know, about people who are essentially wrapped up in themselves and sociopaths, you know, like, we've talked enough about you, let's talk about me now, is sort of the phrasing in there. Like, he's just, you know, there's nobody he finds more interesting than himself, and that's reflected in a lot of ways. I mean, generally, there are traditions, of course, you know, if I'm putting my historian's hat on, that things are only named after people, first of all, after they're gone, and are only named after people by other people as a tribute to them. You got to kind of go back to about Napoleon's days or otherwise to find somebody who said, I'm so interesting, I think I'm going to name everything after myself, but that's who we're dealing with again.
Okay, and putting your hat on as an historian, so we had tariffs in 1930, the Smith-Hawley?
Smith-Hawley, yeah.
Yep. Can you draw anything from the history of that, of how long this tariff obsession in general might last?
Well, the thing is that everybody, including an awful lot of Republicans, really hate tariffs because, of course, you know, the evidence is there. It's very clear to everybody that in the end, a tariff is a tax on your own country. Because sure, you're charging it to people. It's an import tax on people bringing it in. But ultimately, you know, and all the data is there, prices rise. So if he's going to do this, prices are going to rise. The only thing that they've done, which kind of, you know, acknowledges that, is that these would take effect on January 1st, which first of all, of course, leaves a lot of time for a climb down. And second of all, would take place after the congressional and Senate elections this fall. So that the real impact of this, which could be anywhere from 3 to 5% inflation, which is a big, big number, but that would only happen after the elections. So, you know, if he was all serious about this, it would have happened. If he, you know, if they believed it was such a great thing for their own country, it would have happened today. It didn't.
Okay, and here we have 2 weeks. The other thing is everybody keeps citing the midterms and saying, well, he's going to get hammered in the midterms. And I'm thinking, so what? He just lies about what happens and signs executive orders to do what he wants.
Yeah, I mean, there's two things that can happen. One is, of course, the big hope on anti-Trump people is that the Democrats get their act together. And if they actually were to sweep both Congress and the Senate, then you can hold up a ton of legislation, as Barack Obama learned, you know, after in his first term when that happened. He could still bypass executive orders and things, but the problem, of course, is that the Democrats cannot agree among themselves in the first place. They seem to spend more time fussing about international affairs, you know, about worrying about Palestine and other things, at a point where most Americans, by every evidence and every poll, are saying, you know what, I don't really have enough to buy my dinner tonight or lunch tomorrow. That's what I'm really worried about. And that's going to be, you know, if the Democrats are smart, they're going to bring focus on that issue because that's the table stakes issue. But we don't know if that, we don't see that necessarily happening.
Okay. So, final question. I've been asking people that because there are a lot of people who are saying, you know, the majority of Canadians are behind this rupture, and that means it'll be very hard for us to get back to the table. Do you think that there is a way back to the table anytime soon?
Yeah, there is. Both sides have to swallow. The PM's already made clear that he's prepared to do that in the right atmosphere. I think, you know, it starts by saying to the Americans, we're not going to bother having these talks if you're actually going to go after our sovereignty. If you're going to try and tell us who we can sign trade agreements with and what those trade agreements look like, let's not waste our time. If you want to actually have a discussion about the specific tariff issues on both sides on the table, we're there for that. Because, you know, in the end, our guy is pretty transactional. And on the other side, he is not transactional, but there are a lot of Republicans who are quietly saying, I'm going to get blown out of here if you don't fix this. And, you know, and I need this fixed. And if enough of them get together and go through and make that clear, then maybe you see a breakthrough.
Anthony Wilson Smith, thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Libby. Great to catch up.
Great to catch up. And that is all the time we have for Fight Back with Libby Znaimer for today. Follow us on Instagram. Follow us on YouTube. I'll be back here tomorrow, and we'll talk then.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.